Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a very special Extra Turns All Legacy Edition. I am joined by three Legacy players. In Arizona, we have Chris. Say hello, Chris.
I'm actually in New Mexico, but hi, everybody.
They're very close, and when you're in Tennessee, they're all the same.
When you're in New Mexico, they're basically the same, too, actually.
And also, we are joined by Andrew tonight, one of the Knoxville community's legacy players, probably on the forefront of the Knoxville community legacy.
Well, at least at the local card store we're at. Hello, everyone.
And also, we are joined by the host of Legacy Weapon Podcast, Jamie. Jamie, tell us a little about your podcast.
Well, thanks. We started up a new podcast. Drew Walton is my co-host. We both got into Legacy only a few months back, and we realized that there weren't many good resources for people brand new to Legacy. So we decided to start really bottom level, like here's what a fetch land is, here's what a dual land is, stuff like that, and kind of work our way up. And we're now getting up there with deck techs and more real content, but trying to get people over that initial barrier to entry so that they can start in Legacy.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining me tonight. Let's go on, jump right in with Turn Zero. Chris, can you tell us a little about MTG, The Source?
Sure. I mean, I feel like I mentioned it before on the show, but really it's the best website to go to for any Eternal Magic. There's really good forum communities and discussions going on all the time about, I mean, everything from the subtleties of card interactions to my foils are pimper than yours.
That is a concern in Legacy. You know, I forget who it was, but they were playing at GP New Jersey. The entire deck, everything that could be foil was foil. Everything else was beta and or altered. So, welcome to Legacy. And this kind of pushes us into turn one. Barriers to entry. Jamie, your show's all about barriers to entry. Will you go ahead and kick us off?
Yeah, love to. The way I see it, when I was first looking at Legacy, I thought that was an impossible thing. That's only for people who are either old or rich. And I thought it was this really high bar that you had to kind of leap up to. And what I realized after trying to get into it a little bit and learning a little bit more is the two barriers that I was worried about are not as bad as they seem. The first barrier is, complexity. It's got all these old cards, all these turn one wins, all this crazy powerful stuff that just seems kind of intimidating.
And a lot of cards don't do what they say on the card. That's a big barrier for new players.
Oh, yeah.
Chains of Mephistopheles, I have been on the air saying what it does wrong.
Yeah, I still couldn't tell you what that card does except confuse people.
And that one doesn't even come up all that much anymore since Treasure Cruise got banned.
Yeah, that's the best thing about the Treasure Cruise ban is you don't have to see chains anymore.
Well, yeah, but exactly. I mean, some of the cards themselves are just really confusing. You're going to be seeing cards that with the word interrupt on them as the card type or mana source as the card type. Mono artifacts and poly artifacts, things that don't exist anymore and don't mean what they tried to mean in the first place. That sounds really intimidating, but it's really not. All those things are simple once you know them, and the thing is, unlike Standard that's changing every week, Legacy does not change that fast. Even when it gets shooken up, that just means that one deck that was a Tier 2 deck is a Tier 1 deck now. That's the big shakeups in Legacy. So it's the kind of thing that if you can learn it, you'll know it, and you'll have it down, and you'll always be able to follow it, even if you take time off. So that's one barrier down as far as I'm concerned. The other one that was a bigger problem for me, because I've got a family, I only have so much money to spend on cardboard, is the cost component. And a lot of these old cards, you see $100 cards, $1,000 cards. It seems really intimidating there too. But what I realized is a lot of the cards aren't as expensive as you'd think. And the ones that are optional if you want them to be. You can pick budget decks. Like you can avoid the mana costs. You can avoid the expense of the dual lands and the fetch lands and all of that if you play a monocolor deck. that cuts the cost in a third, probably. If you don't play blue, you don't have to buy Force of Will, so that's nice, too. So you can really find ways to be a lot more budget and still be really competitive, a tier, you know, 1.5 type deck, and if you're willing to pay enough to buy a standard deck. You know, if you're in standard, you're going to pay, what, how much is a standard deck these days?
200 at top, okay. Top end, I think.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And if you want to... And if you want to stay competitive in standard, you have to kind of switch decks, what, every few weeks?
At least. You have to play the rock, paper, scissor component of standard.
Okay. Well, let's round up to make it cheaper and just say one deck a month. So that's $200 a month to stay competitive in standard. And, yeah, you got these cards, but now they're not good anymore. So your $200 a month is only going to be worth, you know, $40 when all said and done. In Legacy, if you spent, you know, $200 in Legacy, I mean, you could have most of a good deck or one okay deck already done at that point. And if you wait a year, it's still going to be worth the same $200.
Yeah. I think the entire Legacy burn deck is, what, $250?
That sounds about
right.
Yeah,
and that's if you go all out and have, like, the fetch lands.
Oh, yeah.
And, like...
The budget version of the deck without Chain Lightning is... $70, so.
Yeah, and that's probably a tier 2 deck. Sometimes even peaks into tier 1 when the meta's cooperating for it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, the first deck that I did is something called Manaless Dredge, because it's...
You are a bad
person. Never tier
1. I love you. I love you so much.
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to make you both happier and sadder. I've kind of stopped playing it just because... It's only fun to play sometimes, and it's never fun to play against, and it doesn't win that much.
I mean, but it was better when you had to fight with Mental Misstep.
If you want your opponent to cry, it always wins.
True. Yes. All you have to do is say that you want to draw.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the feeling of saying, "I'll be on the draw. Turn one, draw, discard Phantasmagorian." Like, I'm into that more than anybody, but at some point, as a human with a soul, you have to move on.
Yeah. I like having it in case, you know, one month the meta really shifts and no one's guarding against our graveyard hate. I like having it. I just don't like playing it. But, you know, that's a really cheap deck. I got that in trade for, like, $200, $250, and it's got everything you could want for it. It's not a budget version. It's the full version.
Wow, that's good.
And that's fun. Yeah, it's a tier 2 deck, maybe tier 2.5, but it's fine. It works.
And also, on that same line, Manaless Dredge was the first deck I ever pimped, because it cost, like, less than a fifth of any other deck to pimp out. So, like, there's a sort of, like, ladder along that same barrier to entry that you can move up on.
Absolutely. See, and if we're going into Dredge, it's only... What, 8 cards different than Vintage Dredge? Is that about right?
True.
Yeah, and it gets you a shell to invest money into to eventually have good Legacy Dredge.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's kind of the thing is, you know, as you said, you spend $200 now, it's going to be worth $200 or $300 in a year's time. And one of the other things I realized, this is not advice I took, because I went with Elves, which Elves doesn't play anything that's played in other decks, really. But, you know, if you get Wastelands, if you get Force of Wills, that's not only an investment where those are probably going to go up in value. It's an investment in that if you want to switch decks, you can still use those cards. You already have the expensive ones down. So if you're wanting to start and you're looking to save money but still play the top-tier decks, pick a deck that has a lot in common with other decks. You know, don't go get your Tabernacles and your Candelabras.
Yeah.
Go get a Force spell.
Rashad and Port has played in, I think, one Legacy deck, and it's $100.
Exactly one.
No, there's two.
Oh, two. Oh, what's two. It's second? In Goblins, right? Goblins and Death
No,
and
it's in Lands and Death and Taxes.
Ah, forgot about Lands.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed you forgot about really Lands. Someone right just said the Tabernacle.
Yeah, and that deck's so good right now. It's been, like, crushing.
Absolutely.
Yes, it has.
So I think that's probably going to go back down now that the meta's kind of coming back after the Treasure Cruise, the troubled times.
Delver's still there.
Yeah, no, it's still good.
Why can't we just call them the good old days, by the way? The good old days.
I think that's back when Flash was legal, right?
Oh, yeah, those were the better old days.
The better old days.
So, my biggest barrier to entry for Legacy, and you all talk about this in the areas you're at since we're not all in the same geographical part, is when I started playing Legacy, there was not a real Legacy community here. And a lot of thanks to Andrew for helping build the Legacy community here. But what kind of barrier do you all have where you're at with that? Are there a lot of Legacy players, or are you trying to develop people into Legacy players at this point?
Well, so in my location, there's a handful of Legacy players, and they're basically just the, like, top-level GP grinders in the area have Legacy decks or whatever. And a couple of us were playing Legacy on Modo, and one guy in town who is a genuine hero named Robert went out and decided he was going to start running proxy Legacy events. And so he started running 100% proxy events with prize payout that were free to enter. And our Legacy community grew pretty quickly.
Yeah, you told us about that on another show, Chris. And we took your advice and started running 100% proxy Legacy events in Knoxville. And now we probably have total play.
We regularly put between 6 and 8 people into an event. Just every week, and on kind of an awkward night of the week, too.
Yeah, on a Tuesday. So I would say total people, there's about 30 that may or may not show up. If they all showed up at once, you'd be around 30 people?
That might be on the high end, but yeah, I would definitely believe that.
But.
And doing proxy events does a lot to remove one of the barriers to entry that you were talking about, the financial one. But it also has, like, a happenstantial effect on the informational barrier to entry, because it's genuinely embarrassing to spend your year's magic budget on a deck and then show up at a tournament and lose because you don't actually know what's happening around you. And playing in proxy events is just, it feels a lot more friendly to people who don't play Legacy.
Now, I had a question on the proxying, because I've never been somewhere where, you know, in-paper proxying is the thing. Is that the kind of situation where people do pimp their deck out just by getting the real cards to replace out their proxies over time?
So we have people that print out the print out the foil promo versions of Force of Will and play them.
Yeah, so we had people also here starting to print, like, the Judge foil proxies and stuff. And then they would eventually move from, like, Judge foil proxy printouts to, like, real damaged cards.
Mm-hmm.
And people were just like, oh, check it out. Isaac's, like, almost got elves together. And, like, no one mentions the fact that it looks like his Gaia's cradles were buried in soft peat.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing here. I mean, you know, the decks build up slowly, but the people who are invested in their decks and come regularly and are building them, there's a couple people that have their decks all put together, and they're pretty regular players, even though they've only started showing up at the store in the past month or so.
Mm-hmm.
For myself, you know, I've put together, I'm 2 cards short of an entire Storm deck over the course of the past 7 months or so.
Burning Wish or not?
No, 2 copies of Lion's Eye Diamond.
Oh, so easy ones to pick up then at any flea market.
Yeah, right.
almost entirely off of the strength of just playing in events every week. You know, Storm wouldn't have been a deck I would have even picked up otherwise. But just having something that I could, you know, get that is actually reasonably inexpensive, compared with most of the other ones, because the dual lands aren't that expensive. The disruption is much less expensive than, like, Force of Will or anything like that. We'll probably talk about this a little later, when we talk about the format itself. But it's, you know, compared with some of the decks that are considered budget tier one decks, it's pretty inexpensive.
Yeah, it's probably one of the cheapest tier one decks, right?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, you just have, like, LEDs, some lands, and Maybe a tutor.
Yeah. You have LEDs, some lands, and maybe a Grim Tutor.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, like a tutor in the board.
What does Grim Tutor run price-wise?
Ooh, isn't that like...
$250?
Wow.
$250?
I would never have thought that. Okay.
I mean, it's the best tutor in Legacy.
Which is kind of sad when you think about how drawn back it is compared with a lot of the other ones.
I think they need to unban Vamp, but we'll get to that too. So
ambitious. That's ambitious.
Yeah.
That's controversial.
But back to what Jamie was asking, do people pimp out their deck by putting, you know, real cards in? Out of everybody I know that started playing 100% proxy, you know, I'd say 50% of them now have a complete real deck. I finally, after 17 months, just finished Death and Taxes. So, yeah, I mean, it takes a while, but...
Yeah. Well, and that's perfect. That's great. I really am heartened to hear that, because I know some people who will start off with, like, a modern deck and just slowly, piece by piece, turn it into a Legacy deck, and that's painful. If you can start off with a proxy deck just to have fun with and slowly turn it into a real deck, that's got to be a lot more rewarding.
I think...
Oh, yeah, there's a huge sense of accomplishment. Like, you get... If you get a really, you know, high-end piece of your deck, and you can pull that, you know, piece of paper and on a basic land out, and you can, you know, sleeve up the real thing and put it in there, like, that's a huge boost.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you aren't even winning. You're just,
yeah.
You feel like you're winning, and you're just re-sleeving your deck, basically.
Yeah. I think for me, one of the big things was the first deck I chose to play was, like, Esper Stoneblade. Yeah, after I played it a few times, you could not get me to play that deck. So I'm very glad I didn't put any money into it.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing about that, though, is if you had put money into it, you could take any of the money you put into it and use it to make a deck that's actually good.
Well, it's true. That's as long as you are willing to, you know, put in the legwork to trade at fair value, you can really turn one deck into another deck because they keep their value.
Well, and also, like, Forces and Chases. Yeah, Force Chase, Stoneforge Mystic. These cards all go in other decks that I think are much better than Esper Blade.
Yeah, I think about anything's better than Esper Blade. But, well, guys.
I was just going to say what the local scene is here. It's, as I said, I live near Star City Games, so it's almost not a fair question. Just there are a lot of people here who do play Legacy.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of a fun place for that. Unfortunately, family restrictions, I can almost never go to it. Most of my playing is actually on have any of you ever heard of or viewed as a turn zero untap?
I have not.
Okay, well, I don't know.
Not at all.
I don't know if you'd want to air it or not, but untap is a browser-based... Cockatrice or Apprentice or Magic Workstation. So it's just in browser and has the card art, and through creative means, as near as I can tell, is 100% legal. So that's good too. So you can just play test whatever you want. It's got a decent community of just friendly people who are on there all the time, even a little bit of a competitive league type action. So that's where I do a lot of my Legacy testing.
That sounds pretty
good. I also play on Magic League a lot. For testing, just because he's not enough of us locally.
Are you all still there?
I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. I am also here.
Line went dead for a second.
Yes, you faded out really bad.
Oh, I was just saying that I also do a lot of testing on Magic League using Magic Workstation, just because there's so few events locally.
I've never used that, but if it's a tool out there, I guess I need to look into it, huh?
I mean, it's about as bad as Magic Online, but you don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Well,
that's about what I would say as well.
Well, let's move on, if you all don't have anything else, to turn two. And I will throw this question out there for debate. Is Legacy in a healthy state now? Treasure Cruise is banned, all that stuff. Is it a healthy state?
Yes.
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 Why?
Well, this is something that I think really gets to why Legacy is unique as a format. I mean, Vintage has a lot of the same things, but obviously suffers more so from the high barrier to entry.
Is much more high barrier.
Yes, that too. But with Legacy, you know, basically anything can be a deck. You know, some random card that was, I'm trying to think of what the most recent random card that spiked because there was some interaction with a new standard card that made a legacy deck. But they happen on occasion, and odds are that they it's going to stick around. Like even a lot of the decks that that came down the pipe recently in standard, like Delver, like Stoneforge Mystic, that and Jace the Mind Sculptor. In fact, like, you know, you pick up most of the pieces of that in standard, and it's just, you know, you can play it for forever, and it's, you know, there's a lot of play to a lot of them, and it's a very interesting format where you can play a much wider variety of decks than you will ever see in standard, and you'll still get the same, you know, you'll get a much greater breadth of experience and a much greater exposure to just what's going on than really anywhere else.
Yeah, I agree, and it's kind of a counterpoint to what I said at first about how it's a stable thing where you don't need to know a whole lot of decks. There are a certain number of decks that are usually at the top, but I couldn't even count how many fringe decks there are. I mean, you go on the source and just see how many decks are being worked out or established decks that just aren't the top decks. Dozens and dozens and dozens. I mean,
they all could win.
Yeah, and they all can win is the thing.
And they all do win, too.
Yeah. But the reason I think that is healthy, the number one reason that Legacy is healthy is Force of Will. I hate blue. I never play blue. I don't like counterspells on either side, but I'm really glad it exists. Because in Legacy, you can do all the most powerful things. I mean, Vintage has a few more powerful things, but really Vintage just has them faster. Anything you do in Vintage, pretty much you can do in Legacy just a little slower. So you can do the most powerful stuff in Magic, but there are answers. Like, there are huge threats, huge speed, huge everything in Legacy, but every single thing has lots of good, versatile answers, like Force of Will that answers anything. And that kind of keeps any one strategy from really taking off, I think, and in a way that's good and healthy. You know, if you have one deck that's 20% of the field, that's a crazy successful deck that needs – that's a problem at that point if it's 20%.
Agreed.
And that's actually one of the things that makes people get intermittently frustrated with Modern, is Modern doesn't have an analog to Force of Will. So if something starts getting degenerate, the only recourse they have is to ban it. Whereas in Legacy, there's a lot more ability for decks to adapt to it because they have these free instant speed answers to it that are being played anyway because they can cover just whatever your gaps are.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as of right now, I don't think there is a actual, being objective here, best Legacy deck right now. I don't think there is a single deck to beat right now.
I'm not sure there has been one in years.
Blue Red Delver was the last one. Red Delver and Cruz.
But the thing was, well, we can get to this in the next section, but you know, even that, there were good answers to that. If you were prepared for that, you'd do okay.
I mean, I wasn't playing Blue Red Delver in that metagame. I mean, because I felt like you could just construct a deck that beats that deck and beat 30-40% of the field.
Well, I was still playing Elves and just losing, but that was fun too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an option. To take it a step further, actually, I think that Legacy is really healthy right now for a couple of reasons, but mostly it's that we've managed to achieve compression in every color. Like, in addition to the checks and balances, my biggest problem with Modern, actually, is the price of progress doesn't do. And in Legacy, there's so many things like Force of Will, Price of Progress, Blood Moon, to keep people from just being degenerate and unchecked. But at the same time, the last Legacy event I won, I was looping Siege Rhinos with Recurring Nightmare and Phyrexian Tower. And
I crushed
people. Yeah, really? I was just playing Pod in Legacy, crushing people.
I now want to see that list.
Yeah, and the thing is, you can pretty realistically make 2-2 drops on turn 2, or like a Siege Rhino on turn 3, and or like a Pod and a Veteran Explorer on turn 2. And that's a compression that we've never seen before in green decks. Like, you always see the blue decks casting like 7 spells in the first 3 turns, and we're finally getting to a point where that exists throughout the entire color pot, which I think just makes Legacy amazing. Please tell me that recorded and I didn't just cut out.
I heard it.
I could understand it. It faded, but I could hear it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, well, and that gets to what I was saying at the outset, too, that, you know, you can play, like, you know, for the benefit of any viewers who aren't that familiar with Legacy, that's a deck that I've never even heard of before, even though the engine is somewhat familiar as a fringe deck. But you can play literally whatever you want, and you can find something that will make it work and win with it.
He just named 4 cards, and of those 4, 3 of them I've never seen in Legacy, and the 4th one I've seen in a fringe Nitfic. So
using a Nitfic shell, and okay. I just basically slotted. I mean, Siege Rhino is so good in Nitfic. Like, Siege Rhino into Grave Titan, no deck in Legacy can beat.
Well, if we're talking about Legacy decks that may or may not be played a lot, do you all remember at GP New Jersey the guy in the bear outfit that was playing bear? did you all see that? He was playing Bear Force 1.
Yes.
Yes, that's commitment to the cause.
Now. Okay.
And he made day 2 also.
What a hero. Didn't he 9-0 day 1?
Something like that. I'm sure some of those were concessions to the cause, but still, you do not just day 2 a Legacy GP playing Bears Tribal.
Listen, one does not simply crush Legacy with Bears, yeah.
No. So wait, his deck wasn't 2/2s for 2. It was actually creature type bear.
Yes, creature type bear. No Gaddock Teague, no like good bears. No, this guy was playing.
He did play the 4/2 bear, so
yeah,
he got a little boost there. And what is it? The obelisk that gives all of your
that gives all your guys like +2/+2 for a certain creature type.
Yeah. So,
and then there's some other enchantment that does that too.
Yeah, if your creatures have no abilities or something, they get +2/+2. So,
yeah.
But it was tribal bears.
I mean, there's a Star City Games like greatest hits or whatever video that they show from time to time where it's dude just like playing ley lines and crashing some.
Yep.
Okay, that should not be a real deck. That is annoying.
There's actually another one that was like the mono one blue one drop deck that plays like 4 copies of Sky Hussar, and their entire game plan is just play a million one drops and then just keep tapping them in my upkeep to draw cards with the forecast ability of Sky Hussar.
It's Legacy.
And he took 2 hits from a Blightsteel Colossus and still was not dead.
How?
I want to be that guy when I grow up.
That's living right, man.
It involved a rather large Niv-Magus Elemental, but he ate 2 attacks from a Blightsteel Colossus and won that game.
Wow.
The craziest Legacy deck that I've seen, I've not seen in play, so I can't give you a play-by-play of him getting to day 2, but was a you know Goblin Recruiter, right?
Yeah, yes. It's banned now.
It is. Yep. Yes. Do you know what's not banned?
And it should be.
Well, do you know what's not banned? Dwarven Recruiter.
Whoa!
I didn't know there was such a thing.
There is. Put any number of dwarves on top of your deck.
Yeah, I didn't know there were any good dwarves.
No, there aren't. But
oh, okay.
Put 20 of them on top of your deck and then Charbelcher, it turns out okay.
Yeah, that works.
What with a backup plan of beat face with dwarves?
Wow.
I mean,
there's some Legacy decks that are probably soft to that, right?
You know, Belcher is a thing in Legacy. It's a thing I played for about a month. So.
Out to a couple people around here too. So we got reasonably good at fighting it, although it did still go undefeated from time to time.
Sometimes, even when everyone
took prepared for it.
Well, and sometimes it's a metagame choice. I mean, Drew had a Soldier's Tribal Stompy deck, which actually was maybe tier one during the Treasure Cruise time, just because it ran
I think I saw that one. That's the one with, like, turn one Chalice and played Preeminent Captain.
Yep, into Captain of the Watch.
Yep.
Yeah,
that was a pretty cool deck.
Yeah. So if you have an idea for a deck, you can get creative, and you can probably make it at least tier three competitive will-win games. So,
I mean, last time I did a podcast with Joe, I remember saying, like, I think somebody should just, you know, stack up and play Slivers.
You did.
And then, like, that next weekend, somebody, like, top aided with Slivers. Like,
yeah,
you really can do anything.
You can. And we are still taking full credit for making Slivers a legit Legacy deck. So,
absolutely.
Yes.
Ooh,
that was 100% extra credits.
That was Chris's idea, but I'm still taking credit.
Yeah, that's an extra turns original, and I think we deserve all the credit that we can possibly get for people playing Slivers and Legacy, because it can't be that much.
I agree. We deserve everything anybody will give us for it. But guys, we were talking about the recruiters. Would you like to talk about turn three, the banned list, what should come on, go off, in your opinion?
Sure.
Mind twist. Yeah, it's not
and
even good enough.
And Black Vice.
Why?
Yeah, also Black not good enough.
Black Vice was the one I had picked. Do either of you know why it's on there?
No.
yes. Well, so I think I have this, like, fuzzy recollection that there was a time when people played a lot of control. I believe Mana Drain was not banned at this time, and Black Vice was too good.
I really cannot really see it even making a splash. I'm sure it would get played, but I can't see it being a turn one deck, a tier one deck. I really was surprised they didn't unban it.
If it's not unbanned, I put four copies into my burn list immediately just to see what happens. Because
yeah, well, I think that's kind of the obligatory thing. Is Black Vice is kind of the archetypical card that shouldn't be on the Legacy banned list, even though it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the minute that one does get unbanned, like it ought to be, everyone's going to run out and put four of them in the Legacy burn deck and then figure out, this isn't doing what I want it to. And then it's going to come back out and maybe go in the sideboard against, like, Miracles or something, and that's going to be the end of it.
I mean, it's not even good against Miracles, though.
You're right, though. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's just important to have one on there so that new players, you know, can point at it and laugh. Like, the idea about making bad rares so that the new players feel like they're learning something. If we take that off, we got to put Stormcrow on there.
Oh, as long as Squire's not on there, we're good.
Well, Storm is too powerful, and Stormcrow is just one too many tools for Storm.
You're right. It's the embodiment.
That's absolutely correct. That's absolutely correct. There's no arguing with that logic.
Absolutely. So,
There was one really interesting conversation that I had that I'm not sure how I feel about, but I'd love to hear what y'all think. And this was not my idea, but during the Treasure Cruise times, there was debate over whether Treasure Cruise should be banned or not. And I heard some really intelligent discussion on how the problem isn't Treasure Cruise. The problem is having Treasure Cruise and Brainstorm in the same format, so that you can have eight draw threes in your deck. And that to shake up Legacy a little bit, ban Brainstorm and let Treasure Cruise live.
You can't do that.
You can do anything and if we're making the rules. I mean,
well, but the reason you can't ban Brainstorm is Legacy is literally the only Brainstorm format. It's restricted in Vintage. So if you want to play Brainstorm,
hang on,
is the only game in town.
I think you just made the argument. Brainstorm is so good, it's restricted in Vintage, but you can play four of them in Legacy. There's something wrong with that.
Well, Ponder suffers from that argument as well, though, in fairness.
It does.
Yeah, and it's because the things that it interacts with in Vintage are much more powerful than the things it interacts with in Legacy. Like,
Actually, it's interesting, that argument, right after the Treasure Cruise ban, on Star City Games, Drew Levin, who's a prolific Legacy writer, wrote an article saying they will, I can guarantee you now they will never ban Brainstorm because making the exact same comparison you did. Brainstorm and Treasure Cruise basically do the same thing. Brainstorm is clearly better because you get to sculpt your hand. You don't have to enable 7 dredge cards to get right. to the next one, or 7 delve cards, excuse me. It's instant speed, all these things. And they said, okay, Brainstorm is the best. Treasure Cruise is the second best. They looked, the DCI looked right past Brainstorm and said, ban Treasure Cruise.
What you were saying, where it's the Brainstorm format, people would, there'd be riots in the streets. People would be really, yes. really upset.
Exactly.
Even if they could play the same deck, I mean, I don't play blue enough to know how bad this would work. But even if you could play the same decks and just swap out Treasure Cruises for the Brainstorms, and even if they work just as well, some people who are bad people like Brainstorming. So
I'm that guy.
An argument to be made that banning Brainstorm instead of Treasure Cruise would make the format more degenerate, because most, like, as you know, for every time you get a Brainstorm in a deck like Storm or Reanimator that's trying to do something stupid on turn two and lock you out of playing Magic, there's twice or three times as many decks that are using Brainstorm to find something to go with their force, to find the force of will to stop them, or find some interaction to stop them from doing that, so that the format stays in the very healthy place that it is.
That's actually a really good point, that, you know, force of will would be, I mean, still great, but a lot less reliable and less powerful and less of a sheriff for the format if there wasn't a Brainstorm. Well, I never thought about that.
Days would be unplayable without Brainstorm. No one would ever play Days, ever.
Oh, yeah.
I think I would still play one of, because I really like the artwork.
That's a strong argument.
That's why I play one of.
As long as it's the dual deck version, because I love the modern card frame on that on that card.
Oh, who's a bad guy now?
Yeah, I'm with Chris on this one. I like the Nemesis card, man. So,
I feel fine being in the minority on this one.
Well, let me throw these 3 cards out real quick, and you all can shoot them down and laugh at me. We should unban Vampiric Tutor.
No.
You'd have to unban Imperial Seal first.
Okay. We should...
So, I support this, but I'm established as the bad guy, so...
We should unban Library of Alexandria.
That'll go in my Tutor deck, yeah, absolutely.
We should...
I'm sure there's an argument from monetary cost against that. That would single-handedly be the most expensive card in Legacy if they unbanned that.
Now there's more demand for it. Price
went
up. Like fivefold at least.
It'd be fun to watch.
Now,
I don't know if Library would even actually be insane.
Yeah, I don't know if it'd be in a lot of decks. Like a lot of decks are holding four or five cards.
Try to abuse it though.
Of course.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's not Legacy if you're not trying to abuse something. That's true.
That's what we should do.
I'm not sure that would actually be bad for the format. I'm glad it's not, because I don't want that increased price, like you said. I don't think that would be. I really don't want to go on record saying it's okay, because I'm sure somebody will point out how I'm really dumb and it would be terrible.
I feel like
there's
something we're missing. Like, this card is too degenerately good, and we're just not seeing it. But it looks fine.
I think it's on the list because it has always been on the list. It was restricted in Vintage, and when the ban restricted list mirrored each other, it was restricted in Vintage, thus it was banned in Legacy, and it never came off.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's one that I would definitely err on the side of keeping it banned, but I agree. I could definitely, after giving it some thought, potentially get behind saying, you know what, it wouldn't be that bad.
I mean, what deck do you put it in?
Miracles.
Well, you put it in Miracles, or you put it in an entirely new deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, you put it in the bug control deck that I was playing like 3 years ago. With just like Jaces and Lilianas and Pernicious Deeds.
Now, one thought I just had, you know, in its modern, you know, they're testing out Golgari Grave Troll. That was just the always on the list. And they decided to, you know, test it, throw it out there, see if anybody uses it. They can always reban it if they need to.
Mm-hmm.
Should that be a thing that they do in Legacy, where they sometimes just say, hey, see what you can do with this, and if it's bad, we'll reban it next year? Or would that kind of let that lack of faith in the stability of your deck and value of your cards eke over from Modern into Legacy?
See, I come from the old school world of the mid-90s to late-90s Magic, and if it's banned, it's banned. This whole Modern thing where we may unban it, we may ban it, who knows, let's just flip a coin. That doesn't sit well with me. I play
me
Modern
either.
Because there's a large Modern community here, but if it's banned, you either unban it and leave it, or you ban it and leave it. I mean, it needs to be there 10 years before you think about unbanning it. So,
That's fair.
Of necessity, I cannot get behind that sort of idea, because otherwise I would still not be playing Modern. My Modern deck of choice is and always has been Fairies, and the Bitter Blossom unbanning was, like, Christmas
so
in
good.
whatever month that was. March, I think.
March. Well, what do you...
I think it was March.
What do you think?
No, it was January. So it was like a second Christmas a month later.
Yeah. I think that they kind of do that with Legacy already, but nobody notices because there's so many just awful cards on the ban list. So the last unbanning was, I don't even know what it's called, Big Stupid Dragon.
World Gorger Dragon.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That has made literally no
effect. Yeah. I picked up for that.
That's actually, I think, the argument that they are doing that is, you know, World Gorger Dragon came off instead of, you know, to replace Treasure Cruise going on there, and they said, you know, we think this could open up an interesting new Reanimator variant. And, you know, lo and behold, it was perfectly fine to have in the format. You know, no one broke the format with it yet.
Yeah, you have
the possible one,
so...
But also, like, before that, there was the land tax unbanning, where they said, you know, we think this might shake up the format in an interesting and healthy way, and if it's problematic, we can reban it. I think they already do kind of take that approach with Modern. It's just, or with Legacy, it's just that if something goes wrong, it goes so drastically wrong, and that, like, it might require an emergency banning to fix it. And they're very averse to doing it.
But look at how long both of those cards were on the ban list. They've been on the list a long time.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Absolutely. And, I mean, they were problematic when they were put on the ban list. That's why I snap off Mind Twist immediately. There was a time when Ritual Mind Twist was unbeatable in Legacy. But now, because you would go, like, land, bang, like, land, top. And I'd go ritual twist, and you're out of the game. Now you say land Delver. And, like, if I say ritual twist, you won.
Yeah. So.
Or, God forbid, you go ritual mind twist you, and they have a misdirection.
Oh, that would be a lot of fun.
Oh, well, that
so
makes me
good,
feel good,
right?
That makes me feel good inside.
Yeah, man, those are the stories for which we play Legacy.
Yeah, I mean that kind of mirrors the obligatory one of Notion Thief in your sideboard if you're blue black. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Just
sure,
in case
this is never going to be good when it comes in, but the one time that I bring it in, I get you with it. It's going to be worth all the games that I lose for not having that extra sideboard slot.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree. Yeah. So.
Not close. The one time you get to, like, get 5 points of card advantage off of their Brainstorm or a Jace. It totally makes up for the 50 match loss.
Oh, it feels good. So, it feels real good. Well, let me ask you all, could Necropotence ever come off this list?
No.
No.
You know, I thought I'd at least get one yes.
I mean, I wish it could. Like, well, like Storm. I like Degeneracy, but that's...
You're getting a thoughtful pause out of me that you did not get for Vampiric Tutor, so...
See? We're moving in the right direction. I'm not
turn one ritual necro.
Yes.
Like, that's undefensible, man.
Yeah, no, I don't think it can. Okay. I think that's, I'm going to go with no.
It's always been one of my favorite cards, so just hoping. Could
I mean I remember when like Necro was a tier one deck in the only format of Magic, and deep down inside I wish Legacy was that format, and it would be if we unbanned Necro. But come on.
Okay. Can we put Delver on the list just to make me happy because I don't want to see it anymore?
I think Delver is now right up there with a Brainstorm of unbannable because mm-hmm. we like people playing Magic and we don't like people burning their decks in effigy.
Yeah.
Do you remember well, how
and that's the thing is Delver is ultimately a fair Magic card.
No, it's not.
Well,
it's very discounted, but it's eminently a 3-power guy.
What?
Like if you're winning with Delver, you're attacking them for 7 turns, potentially 6 with fetch lands, but 7 turns.
It's hard to imagine that.
Well, so in a world where we're unbanning World Gorge your dragon because Gristlebrand is so good that it's not even gonna matter. In a world where people are cheating in 15-15 Annihilator 6 guys on turn 1, a creature that just attacks and blocks is never going to get.
Yeah. It is not a fair Magic card. It is not a balanced Magic card. It's not correct on the color pie. But if you banned everything that's unfair in Legacy, it would be weaker than Modern.
Yeah, it'd be standard.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, we talk about fair decks. I talk about elves is good against fair decks. There's not a single fair deck. Merfolk is not a fair deck. You know, it looks
no. Jund is not fair.
No, it's not. Elves is not.
And
fair.
And Jund is the fairest deck, and it's not fair at all.
Maybe there's an argument that Death and Taxes is the fairest deck.
I would like to think that, and I am the.
Okay,
fairest
I'll
person.
Agree with that because they have like Nazi-esque enforcement of the fairness.
Yeah, yes. They make everyone else play fair.
And they're the best fair deck.
Yeah, okay, so I'll give you that one. Death and Taxes is definitely the best fair deck. Not fair at all, but the best fair deck.
Yes.
Well, you know, does that lose to Bear Force 1, though, since they're not trying to do anything unfair?
Probably, yeah.
Undoubtedly.
What's Thalia do about a Bears campaign?
I don't think Thalia cares, but you have the 3-casting Double Strike Pro Green.
Well, here's the thing. Thalia cares right up until you give all your guys +2/+2, and suddenly your guy that's blocking with value is, like, dying a horrible death and losing you the card advantage war.
But I feel like if I put Batterskull on the double striking pro green, I'm going to win the race.
There's a good chance that math holds up, yeah. I didn't think about Mirren Crusader, but yeah, he's a house.
Yeah, but Mirren Crusader is usually not, well, I guess it depends on the list you're looking at. Mirren Crusader doesn't see nearly as much exposure as something like Thalia does.
Yeah.
Right.
Brimaz is taking the spots.
I feel like Bear Force 1 should run Dismember.
I can't remember if it did or didn't.
It should. I don't know if it did.
The artwork. It's basically a bear there on the artwork. Basically.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's like a little like horse bear.
It's a Phyrexian bear.
Sure.
with some.
Actually, it's a Leonin, I'm sure, but we'll call it a bear. Honorary bear.
That's close enough.
Seems good. Are there any other cards banned or restricted you would like to see banned or restricted? And yes, I am putting the possibility out of restricting cards in Legacy, which may or may not ever happen.
I've never thought about that. I don't think I like the idea of restricting.
Okay.
No.
Leave that as a Vintage-only thing.
Yeah, I think if we restrict cards in Legacy, it just turns into Vintage very quickly.
You say it like it's bad. Vintage.
I say it like I can't afford to play Vintage.
The entire point of... One of the entire points of Legacy is that it is Vintage without the restricted list.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, it's either legal or it's not. You know, there's no kind of half measures where you can play kind of one of something. You know, if it's good enough that you have to restrict it to one, it's good enough that it should be banned.
That's a fair point. So,
Yeah, so I have a card that's on the banned list in Legacy right now, and I don't know if they should unban it, but so if they just unbanned Gush, would it really be a problem?
It would be broken immediately.
Yes, it would. Yeah.
Yes.
Why? Why?
Have you ever seen Gush in Vintage? I don't even know Vintage, and it's scary there.
So
yeah, I mean, I play Gush in Vintage, but I also play Basic Islands in Vintage.
Gush like gives you the ability to get around the Wasteland. So all of a sudden, the Wasteland that's helping keep the mana bases fair, just a free card. Gush in response.
That's the good answer.
And it's a casting cost. So even if you counter it, don't care. I still got my land.
Now, here's my card on there, which I want to see if any of you agrees may be okay. Hermit Druid.
I was thinking about that, too. There was
it's
a
broken.
Combo.
It's combo-rific, but
yes.
I mean, Balisage Spy, like, there's lots of ways to put your library in your graveyard.
Yeah, that's
so I guess it's a question of how consistent they end up being.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we basically have that deck already.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like World Gorger Dragon. Of it would be a variant on a fringe deck that exists right now. Maybe it would be better. Maybe we'd take that fringe deck up to tier one, but it wouldn't dominate.
What's the
I don't
creature
think.
Type on Balustrade Spy? Do you know? Do you know Balustrade Spy's creature type?
See, I think Hermit Druid with Laboratory Maniac would be a good time in Legacy.
Well, what I'm thinking is Balustrade Spy is a vampire, right? Not a human.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds
so
about right.
So if Spy was a human,
it's a vampire rogue.
Okay, because if it was a human, then you could just play Cavern on humans for your Spy, your Druid, and your Lab Maniac, and that might be too good. But
maybe it's something just that simple that Laboratory Maniac's a human, and you want to be able to counter something.
Yeah, but I think that's probably fair to take off because I don't even if you play Spy and Druid. Is that deck tier one now? I don't think so.
No, I don't think it is.
Well, because they already have, I don't even remember the name of it now, they already have the Balustrade Spies 4 through 8. It's the one that you have to pay a mana and sack it to...
Undercity
Informer. Oh, yeah.
Undercity Informer. Yeah, they already play something that does that. So, and, you know, Undercity Informer is arguably faster than Hermit Druid because you have to... With Hermit Druid, wouldn't you have to wait a turn?
Unless you gave a haste.
So I would say that we either need to, like, I think this is strong logic, we either need to unban Hermit Druid or ban Undercity Informer. Mm-hmm.
The one thing that may argue against unbanning Hermit Druid on that logic is Hermit Druid only cares if you reveal a basic land, so you could turn... Oops! All spells into oops! No basics, which is
a
much
significantly better.
Yeah, it's a significantly better constraint because you have so many more lines that you can open up now.
That's a really good.
The trade off, of course, is that then it makes your deck a lot less consistent because you're turning off the Balustrade Spies and Undercity Informers.
Yeah, if your only way to do it.
And if that deck's too good, then you just play a turn one Blood Moon deck, and Legacy fixes itself.
And if you want to make sure you get the turn one Blood Moon, you present 53 cards and palm your hand. I hear it was popular at the Pro Tour, so...
Yeah, that's the new technology, dude.
Oh, who did that? I didn't hear about that
Steven
one.
Like
Speck.
Eight people!
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
There were, from what I recall, 13... disqualifications on day one that people I know saw.
Wow. That's...
Holy God.
Really?
I didn't know it was that high. I thought there were only like two or three.
I heard about two disqualifications.
I mean, yeah, there was just like a bunch of poor mechanics, warnings adding up to game losses, adding up to DQ. Like, people were just playing like it was FNM and they're drunk.
You shouldn't do that at a Pro Tour.
No. You know, the other things not to do, don't stack your deck and don't lie to judges. But
yes,
you know, that's
don't
just...
lie to judges. Even if you stack your deck, don't lie to the judge.
I also would like to advocate against stacking your opponents.
Yes.
Yeah.
You'll get insta-banned for that one if history is anything
that,
to go on.
Yeah, if you're going to do that, please do it on camera. Look straight at the camera. Wear a name tag so we know exactly who you are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, and I mean, maybe I'll even shout you out on the internet for like 3-4 months leading up to your ban, because I'm mad at you.
Yeah. There, mm-hmm. there are some people I think if you did that too, you might get punched in the face also. So, just one of the joys of cheating at Magic.
That's actually, I think, the great thing about the fact that that Magic is now in a very strong internet age is with streaming of Magic matches and what have you, there's a lot more people that have the ability to actually look for stuff like that once people figure out what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes a lot harder to actually get away with it.
Completely agree.
Yeah. I know you kind of talked about it a little bit on the last episode, but I think there is an interesting discussion that was had online in angry voices, but that could be had in more civil voices now about whether that should have any impact while a game's going on, like to help a judge make the correct ruling, whether they could, if they wanted to, or if it was fast enough, look at the tape or ask the spectators of Twitch or something. I don't know.
I think the answer to that needs to be no. Because
it currently is no by the rules, and it's just whether that needs some leniency on it.
I think the problem
actually
is
it's interesting that you
tables that are being cameraed at a pro tour, so you're enforcing a different set of rules on four players than on the other 398.
And that's actually why they made that rule, because they have checked the tape before. They like on the pro tour when they told Kibler, we never do that. That's simply not true. They have.
They have, and they made the rule because it caused a problem. And actually, they brought this exact issue up. They brought this exact issue up on the JudgeCast podcast that aired today. They talked about it. They said, look, potentially this is something, potentially there's room for revising this, the way that we enforce this ruling, but as of right now, this is where it is. And particularly with regard to the camera thing, we Wizards, and we especially, do not have the infrastructure to do like what the NFL does with the instant replays. They have myriad resources behind them from the studios and from all the people that are collating the feeds from all the cameras, looking from every which way, so that if they do need to call a review from the video, they can instantly pull up the exact clip at the exact right time, and it's right there. Magic does not have those resources.
No, but they do have the ability to ban people for a very long time, which is probably going to be happening. But
yes.
So I think that even more important than the infrastructure is just the enforcement. Like, imagine you're at the Pro Tour, you're 5-0 going into round 6, and you get paired up against me, and I'm also 5-0 going into round 6. So we get paired and we're on table 5 and we don't get a feature match table because we're just a couple guys that nobody is, right? And then I scumbag you to hell. And the exact same thing happens at the next table over and they check the tape for that guy and tell you to get wrecked.
Yeah.
Well, this is a probably more contentious and long conversation because I am actually on the other side and I won't go into all the details, but I think Levino, you said it the best way. It's all about whether you are more interested in decreasing variance in judging quality or increasing your accuracy in judging quality. If you cared only about increasing accuracy across the board, then in every case you'd use every resource available because that would make the most correct rulings. If you're most interested in decreasing variance, then you pull everyone down to the middling quality of judge accuracy just so that everybody has the same situation going on.
The real issue, I don't think that they're most interested in either of those things. I think they're most interested in tournament attendance being up, and a perception of unfairness would hurt tournament attendance, I think.
Well, tournament attendance and to an extent also tournament integrity, because if you
sure.
enforce the rules, if you persistently downgraded penalties on the basis of video evidence when that's not available to everyone, that says a lot about kind of who you're valuing. And
right, it's like a rich get richer problem.
Yeah.
Well, but then again, if my opponent is the one who gets, not downgraded because we're at a lower table, then I'm a lower table person and I'm being helped by that fact. I mean, it doesn't innately help anybody off the board because I might be the one who's helped or the one that's hurt. It's
no, I admit that what I'm saying is a logical fallacy. I don't necessarily think it's right to not use the footage. I just think that people in general would perceive it as unfair and throw a fit.
Well, I think you're probably right. As much as people felt like, certain players were treated unfairly individually, I think you're probably right that people would feel like the system was unfair to them.
Exactly.
If it is the other way.
Well, I'm against replay in every sport, so I'm going to be against replay in Magic also.
That's good. I like that. I've actually literally never met somebody who was that hardline. I'm against it in every sport. I like that.
All right. I'm against a lot of things, though, so...
So there's one
thing.
Well,
we'll have to chat about it tomorrow then.
I think so. Guys, are you all ready to move on to turn four? Talk a little bit about the Wizards of the Coast support for Legacy.
There was one other thing I wanted to mention while we were talking about footage.
Okay.
It's just the other side of it, how we were talking about how it's good that we have so much footage now because people can find out the genuine scumbags amongst us. I also would just like to caution people to calm down with the witch hunts a little bit. Like, sometimes people are just confused and nervous,
yep.
and they didn't mean to put one card underneath another for the Thoughtseize, and their opponent should have fanned it out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we do need to find a healthier balance there.
Oh.
True. Yep.
If Magic players can't complain about something, what are we going to do, guys? Like,
how was I the only one complaining about the new card frames with M15? I'm the only one who got upset about that in the entire world, apparently.
I was upset
about
it.
Honestly,
until
those
I saw
annoyed
the
me for a little bit, and then I got used to them, and I'm like, whatever.
No, I'm still raging. I'm still kicking walls and flipping tables, dude. Me and you. We'll
the
keep
color
the
border. The color border is important, and now it's so tiny. It's only on three sides. It's
See, I am more upset that they're calling their font Barrowin than...
Oh, yeah. That actually did kind of peeve me a little bit.
See, we're Magic players.
And I'm the blue guy, too.
This is the first I've heard of that, and I feel kind of sick right now.
I know. Well, guys...
That's gross.
Let's go ahead and move on to turn four.
Yeah. I think that's slow play in turn three.
Okay. Warning for slow play.
It happens. Wizards of the Coast support for Legacy, turn four. So Wizards doesn't support Legacy a whole lot, but recently, in Commander products especially, we've gotten cards like Flusterstorm, True Name Nemesis, and then in the...
Containment Priest.
Oh.
Scooze. Which then got reprinted in a core set, because apparently it was good.
And let's not forget...
They did it in Modern.
Let's not forget the white card that doesn't target and allows you to get rid of True Name Nemesis. The name has escaped me.
Oh, Council's Judgment.
Will of the Council?
There you go. What do you think about these cards? Is this okay to bring new cards into Legacy that have no experience in other formats? We saw the upheaval, the pushback against True Name. Are you all okay with this or not?
I actually am perfectly fine with it.
I think it's amazing. The problem with True Name has nothing to do with the product. It's just the worst Magic card ever designed.
Yeah, pretty much.
I love True Name.
And even in spite of being the worst Magic card that's ever designed, which I'm kind of on the fence about, but I can definitely understand that argument. It's still eminently answerable.
Exactly.
And the format has come to an equilibrium even with the existence of a card as bad as True Name Nemesis.
Yeah, it's not a big player anymore.
Not even remotely. It's in like probably two decks.
Maybe.
It holds a sword well and it's a merfolk, but besides that.
It is a merfolk.
Yeah.
And
it's in the blue white red Delver deck. It's in merfolk and however, however highly Stoneblade decks place, it's basically a harder to kill Vendilion Click in the Stoneblade decks.
Yeah, my issue with Nemesis is basically just that Geist of Sandtrapped already existed when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I feel like there are two cards trying to do the same thing, and Geist was fine. They didn't need to make it better.
See, my one complaint about these cards is that they have not naturally passed through the formats. I know it sounds silly, but I would like to see Flusterstorm in Modern.
I would like to see Flusterstorm in Modern too, because that would be a great card for my deck. But I think there is an advantage to putting them in the supplemental products so that they don't have, because all of the cards that pass through the formats have to pass the standard test. They have to be fair in standard.
Like Treasure Cruise.
They have to be printable.
Like Treasure Cruise. Treasure Cruise, for whatever reason, is fair enough in standard, even though it's really bad in everything else. But that's the thing, is Treasure Cruise didn't pass the test, but it wouldn't have passed the test regardless of whether it was in standard or not. True Name Nemesis, if it had to pass through standard, actually, True Name Nemesis is a bad argument, but Containment Priest would never see play if it had to pass through standard, because there's just no deck that, like, you know, can, you know, in standard, that can have that kind of a power level, even without the hate bear effect.
The other thing with that is Flusterstorm could never have been printed in a standard set, because then they'd have to put Storm in standard again, like the mechanic Storm.
I'm not sure mechanic Storm, if you printed it as a one of, just throw Flusterstorm in standard right now, I'm not sure it makes a huge, huge difference.
It doesn't, but they won't just put one card with a keyword mechanic, because that's confusing to new players, and standard is the door to new players.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's actually a good argument that I hadn't thought of. Yeah, the way that Wizards has, you know, has implemented their design philosophy is, you know, we want these keywords to, you know, show up, you know, to show up at common, to show up, you know, at all these places, and you can't do more Storm cards at common. You can't do more Storm enablers, because then you risk just shoving the Eternal formats completely off the deep end.
Right, and Mark Rosewater has said, if it's not at common, it's not in your set.
Yeah.
Well,
which I would be happy to see that, you know, Dragon's Tark here isn't about dragons.
Right. I kind of had that same critique myself.
You know, Dragon's Maze wasn't about dragons, so...
That's because there wasn't any dragons in it.
It wasn't about dragons. It wasn't about a maze. Well, Dragon's Maze wasn't about anything.
Dragon's Maze was about...
Breeding Pool? Like, getting the last of your Shocklands?
Arguably fused cards.
Okay. So...
Arguably fused cards. I think they went as low as uncommon with those.
So as we have went way off the rails, everyone here is okay, except me, with supplemental products going straight into Legacy and Vintage?
Yes, and the reason is because it lets them do things that they could not do in Standard, but they can still potentially explore that space for we Legacy players who appreciate those kinds of things, even if they would be unhealthy in Standard or even in Modern.
So this is
okay. And to otherwise get one card a year.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's about what it's been lately. Well,
and the other way to look at it is that's a way that they can, you know, without having a restricted list and without fiddling around on and off the ban list all the time, they can try to fix problems or shake things up a little bit in very carefully designed ways without, you know, ruining everybody else's deck. You know, if you're having a real problem with Show and Tell, well, we'll just print Containment Priest rather than ban Show and Tell.
Seems good.
Yeah.
How long do you think they can keep doing that for, by the way? Like, eventually they have to ban Show and Tell, right?
Show and Tell, I think, is less good now. And I said that very specifically. Less good. Still very good. Now than it was 2 years ago.
Oh, by a wide margin.
Yeah.
I play Death and Taxes and Burn, and I don't worry about Show and Tell a whole lot. The last time I played against the Show and Tell deck, I was playing Burn, and he brought in Gristlebrand, and I brought in, I know, right? And I brought in the enchantment that says players can't gain life, take 2 damage a turn. So,
right.
Seems good.
I have a friend who has, like, a million Glittering Wishes. And And he bought them when they announced Modern as a format for like a quarter a piece.
Wow.
And I was like, this is a terrible card. Why are you buying it? And he said, I know it's bad, but they keep printing multicolored cards, so eventually it'll be good. Right?
Yeah.
Well,
did he unload them when when Just Gaia Ascendancy was a thing?
Yeah, I think he got like $30 a pop.
Oh. Wow.
Good on him.
Yeah.
But my thought process, though, is like, they printed Imrakul. They printed Gristlebrand. They printed Omniscience, right? They're going to keep printing these big degenerate things that are ostensibly for EDH, but doesn't eventually it reach a threshold where just show and tell can't exist anymore?
Kind of the birthing pod argument?
Yeah.
As long as it's two-sided, I think it's fine.
And three mana's a lot.
Here's my thought. You know, the thing is, at this point, what are you going to put into play that's better than Sneak Attack, you know, bashing you with an Emrakul, or Omniscience drawing my entire deck with this other card? Like, at this point, it kind of boggles the mind what else they can print that you would rather put into play than one of those two things.
If they print it, I will rage about it.
It's not that you would rather put it into play. It's that you could also have, like, just more options, more things to show in. I would almost never rather show and tell an Emrakul than a Gristlebrand. But if I have Show and Tell, Ancient Tomb, Lotus Petal, Emrakul, I'm going to play it on turn one.
And you're probably going to win.
Even if it is less good than Gristlebrand, it's good enough, right? My concern is they're going to keep printing things that are good enough.
Okay, I can see that.
As long as they're just good enough, I don't think it gets banned. But
yeah, that's my thing. I mean, how many show and tell lists now? How many Gristlebrands are they running? How many Emrakuls? Is it 4 and 4?
Four.
I think it's 4 and 4. Yeah.
Okay. So say they print a bigger Emrakul, the same, and you could have up to 12. I mean, are you going to run 12? Like at a certain point, you got to stop adding. And then it's just
you're
winning
12.
One way or another.
12 is the number at which I'd stop adding,
though. I agree. 12, like in Boggles, you have 12. 12 is a great number.
I've never played Show and Tell.
The test then is the next time they print something as good as Gristlebrand or Emrakul, and everybody goes to 12. If that breaks it, then it's broken. If it doesn't break it, well, keep printing them. You're not going to run 16. You're not going to run 20.
I definitely agree with that. If 12 is safe, then it's safer.
Yeah.
We will find out soon, I'm sure. Going back to Zendikar.
Battle for Zendikar.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited about it. But so let me ask you another question, and this is a little bit inverted. So when they're printing special products, it's going straight to Legacy. And we've talked about this on our cast a little bit. What if they took some underpowered Legacy cards, and I'm going to use Factor Fiction? It's a little underpowered in Legacy right now, correct?
Yeah.
Sure.
What if that was printed in Modern Masters 2015, 2016, whatever, and became a Modern card? So instead of just printing cards and making them go straight to Legacy, they printed some cards that went straight to Modern.
I think that could be way too confusing, because right now,
yes,
if you did that, you'd have to say that everything printed in the Commander sets in a new frame are in Modern, unless they go on the ban list or something. I think that makes it just a little bit too piecemeal. It makes them feel like you're in 5th edition rules or something.
What they'd have to do is they'd have to change how they define Modern. So right now, Modern is defined as all the cards that were in Standard from 8th edition on forward.
Yes.
If potentially they could change that to plus cards that are printed specifically in Modern Masters supplemental product.
There you go.
But then they need to maintain a list of what those cards are that people can consult. And it makes it much harder to police, as someone who is anticipating doing deck checks for the foreseeable future, it makes it much harder to police whether a card is Modern legal or not.
What if it was 5 cards a year? That's all.
You'd still have to then memorize the list. I mean,
you'd still have to memorize the list.
Okay.
I already have people getting really confused that Cabal Therapy isn't legal in Modern because they have it in a Modern frame.
Yep.
Look at it; it's a Modern frame. Why can't I use it?
I mean, even, you know, even Demonic Tutor, you can argue that it's in a modern card frame because it can't, because it was in the dual deck.
No,
yeah,
I think the dual decks have confused a lot of people.
Yeah, so I think that's already made it more confusing than it should be. And I think adding on, here's an extra list to memorize, is just too much for players to have to keep up with.
Okay.
Particularly if we're trying to, you know, in a certain sense, poach players from Standard. You know, these are the players that we're trying to get into Modern are the players that play Standard probably pretty regularly, and we're trying to get them into, you know, non-rotating formats. And if suddenly they have not just these, you know, these cards that are in these two sets that they have to keep track of, but they have to keep track of a whole bunch of other sets, plus this other list that's going to get significant, you know, pretty long at some point. Especially if we're going five cards per year for the foreseeable future, like there's a lot of, you know, that's a much greater barrier of entry into Modern, for the Standard players than, you know, even now is.
Okay. Well,
so I'm 100% on the other side of this argument. I think so. If they had to maintain a list, it would be a barrier to entry. And I think five cards a year is too many. But say they did two, three cards a year, then it would take a very long time before that list got substantial enough to be a problem. And by the time that happened, it would simply be a truism that the list exists, and people would be done complaining about it. And the reason I support the idea is actually, by definition, Modern is more powerful than Standard. Like, non-rotating formats are just more powerful. And there's real problems with Modern. There is literally no way to punish people for their greedy mana base outside of, like, Lightning Bolt. And that's a real problem. But you could never print Wasteland or Price of Progress or even really Blood Moon, I think, in Standard, right? So in order to introduce a new thing, Blood Moon's a terrible example because it already exists in Modern, but to introduce a new thing that's powerful enough to deal with these non-rotating format problems, you couldn't just jam Price of Progress in Standard.
It'd be fun to watch.
I'll actually say I had given a lot of thought to Wasteland for Modern, because I think that that's, as you said, an important kind of stopgap, kind of alongside Force of Will and Legacy, something that Modern right. could use. I'll say I don't think that would be a problem in Standard if it went in the right set. If you had two blocks next to each other that were like Theros, where you're encouraged to play monocolor, I mean, how often are you going to be running and relying on your non-basics? I don't know. I think it could be okay in Standard. Honestly, the reason why...
That's a very hard format to design, though. Like, a format that's all pushed towards monocolor hard to make fair and balanced.
Well, they did it with Tempest and Urza's block, but that got very degenerate, so...
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you play multicolor in Legacy, even though there's Wasteland. I mean, you can do it. Wasteland doesn't say you can't play it. Just if you make it an option, I think it could be in the right Standard format just fine. The reason why I came down to wanting to keep it out of Modern is actually just to keep the distinction between Modern and Legacy as distinct as possible.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm against Wasteland also.
Yeah.
Just because that's Legacy.
Yeah, I've heard people say Legacy is going to go away at some point, it'll just be Modern. I say no, because the thing is, people want to play with all the cards. Legacy will stick around, and eventually, you know, 20 years from now, the distinction between Legacy and Modern will be so small that they'll redo Modern. They'll redefine it in the future someday, same way that they redefined Extended.
So do you think that redefinition of Modern might scoot up to the new card frame at M15?
It crossed my mind.
They'd have to reprint the Shocklands again, at the very least.
I'm okay with
it. Or they could just, like, make a new format and call it Modern-er.
Well, guys...
Underextended.
We have gotten very off the Legacy topic. So why don't we move on to turn 5? So, real quick, about 15 to 30 seconds apiece, everybody run through, for new listeners that might have just came to this and said, I want to play some Legacy... What deck do you suggest they play, and why? Andrew, would you like to go first?
I have not thought about this.
I know, I'm putting you on the spot.
If they're coming from standard, probably one of the mid-range decks, like I would probably say like Shardless Bug or maybe even a Delver deck. Yes, there's a very high skill cap, but it's going to be the most familiar to them if they're familiar with kind of mid-range matchups, playing creatures, bashing with creatures, you know, potentially countering spells, playing discard spells, you know, playing removal. That's going to be a deck that's very familiar to them. And so, like, Shardless, you know, there's some interactions to learn, but once you learn the interactions, you know, the deck plays kind of like a souped-up standard deck.
Seems good. Chris, how about you?
Death and Taxes. I think that any time you start playing a new game, if you want to experience it right, you should play on hard mode. And, I mean, Death and Taxes was my first Legacy deck, and it's a very, very, very good deck, but it's so hard to play right. Your cards are so much less powerful than the things that the other people are doing, and it makes you really, really, really learn the format. You have to know every card that matters coming out of every other deck to play Death and Taxes successfully. And so just as like a roadmap to the format to see what everything has out there and really open your eyes to the possibilities of Legacy and how it interacts and doesn't interact, I think Death and Taxes.
I agree with everything you said about Death and Taxes. You need to know everything about every deck. But Jamie, what deck would you suggest?
I would say if the money is your concern getting in, or is any concern at all, I'd go with Burn. Burn is not nearly as easy and simple as people make it out to be. Anyone who says Burn is for dumb people, they're wrong. They're just not thinking it very carefully.
They've never played Burn.
There's a lot of skill involved. But since it is so much cheaper, and since it has so many of the same cards that you've seen in Modern and in Standard, the barrier on kind of what things to think about is low. It's kind of the same idea as Modern Burn in general terms. The cost is relatively low, so you can get in, and if you end up not liking the deck or doing poorly with it, you won't feel bad that you spent $1,000 on a deck. You'll feel bad you spent, you know, $200 and now switched out for another one.
That is a very valid point.
Yeah, because that's what you would do in Standard anyway, pretty much.
See, personally, I think if somebody came to me and said, Joe, I want to play Legacy, what deck should I play? I tell them they should play Belcher.
Listen to this. I know you, too.
Yeah. You can practice it at home, and you don't even need an opponent. There's that, I mean.
Yeah.
So
your answer is literally the opposite deck for the opposite reason is my answer?
Oh, yeah. You can practice at home without an opponent. You can cheat first turn wins. I mean, you sit down against Death and Taxes, you could win on the first turn. Okay, that was fun.
Let's do it again.
Wins, Mom, go. Scoop face.
Scoop. Yeah, so it's just so easy to play. And it's relatively cheap. There's one dual land in most builds. The Belchers, the Lion's Eye Diamonds cost a little bit of money. But it's relatively cheap, and you get the chance to socialize with people at your tournaments because your round shouldn't last very long.
And even if the duel is too pricey for you, you can go in for a Stomping Ground,
yeah,
too.
Because it doesn't
matter. The two life that you pay to put it into play tapped matters in exactly 0% of your matchups.
Yeah, Belcher more than any other deck in Legacy. You can just run Modern Land, it's fine.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I mean, pretty much, I bet 40% of the time on the first turn, you ask your opponent, do you have a Force of Will? And they go, nah. You're like, I win. Good game. That's how the deck works. It's a great Legacy deck. It does all the degenerate stuff. But
great.
Actually,
is
I've got one more idea.
Okay.
So on the subject of degenerate decks, you know, in terms of well, this is the one that I cut my teeth in Legacy on is Elves. I think Jamie, you'd mentioned that as playing Elves as well. Elves is by no means an easy deck, but it's similar to Belcher. It's something you can practice going off at home. It's very consistent.
It might be the best.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. And
I've said that for a long time.
And it's a deck that rewards you for knowing all the little lines as well. So you feel you like when you're playing it, you feel good and you feel like you're actually doing things and knowing a deck well and knowing a format well. And that's really, I think, the key thing about Legacy is knowing kind of what cards you're looking out for, what you're playing around, you know, what your outs are.
Yeah.
Kind of getting that sort of mindset.
I will say the difference between a good Elves player and a great Elves player is night and day. Like, a good Elves player is so easy to beat. A great Elves player loses very rarely.
Not say Elves is the answer to your question, and it was just the money thing is why.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Right.
Well, because, I mean, heck, literally the first conversation about Legacy that I had, it was Drew saying, you should trade me one of your guys' cradles because I want it for EDH. I say, maybe. He says, then again, you've got three of them. You have Elves already. And then I had Elves.
That's
pretty much it. So Elves is the deck I moved to off of Death and Taxes, and it's an just great deck for learning those lines and things.
So it sounds like between the four of us, we are going to settle on Elves. If you are going to play Legacy and money's not a huge concern, Elves may be the way to go.
So if money is no object, I advocate Sneaky Shell.
Oh. I could never... Sneak and Show is too unfair, says the Belcher player.
Yeah.
For all the reasons you said, Belcher, I said Sneak and Show, actually.
It actually, as much as I hate blue, I almost want to recommend somebody to play blue just because it's such an important thing because it's so strong. So they can kind of, there's reasons you said Death and Taxes, make yourself get used to using Brainstorm, using Force of Will.
All right.
But I think if it's somebody who's never seen Legacy before, play for a month with something else so you see somebody else use Force of Will against you and then dig in.
That's fair. You don't want to be the guy casting Brainstorm at your first Legacy event.
No.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Agreed.
That card's hard.
So the very first time I cast Brainstorm in Legacy, I went fetch land, crack, get a duel, Brainstorm. Untap, play a duel.
Strong play.
Yeah.
Strong
so
play.
So the guy was playing, Mangone from our podcast, goes, did you have the duel in hand last turn? I was like, yeah. He's like, you're so bad at Legacy. So that is why I started playing Death and Taxes. But, well, guys, I hate to rush off here, but I got to go to bed. I have to be on work in just a few hours. So anything anybody wants to add?
Sorry to hear.
If you like what I have to say, listen to Drew. Drew is actually the brains of our operation. So that's all I got to say. Most of the stuff I said today is what he recommended I bring to the show today.
All right. And we can find you at mtgcast.com.
That is correct. Legacy Weapon. We are on episode 5. Should be coming out next week, I think.
Well, I really enjoy your cast. I like the way that you always refer to us as fellow students. It feels like we're learning something together, and I personally enjoy it.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. It's working. It's working. The plan is working.
Andrew, Chris, anything you want to add?
I'm going to give a shout out if you're in the Knoxville area to definitely come out to the Proxy Legacy Nights that we have on Tuesdays at Level Up. They are a blast. They're a lot of fun.
Agreed. $5 to play. Start at 6:30. Chris, anything you want to say?
However much Legacy you play, you should go play more. Also, since nobody's brought it up this whole podcast, and somebody's got to say it, get rid of the reserve list. And
I was avoiding that. No, that's way too big a topic. We can't do that.
No, I'm just trying to sneak it in under the radar at the very end.
Well, maybe instead of getting rid of it, let's just take Homelands and all the rest of that junk off of it. You know, keep the good cards, get rid of the cards that...
Didgeridoo?
Oh, my gosh. Reserve list? Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And I guess
you should have us back in another podcast to gripe about the reserve list for an hour and a half.
I will do that.
Oh, we could go a lot longer than an hour and a half. So,
and also, I really want to give a shout out to my buddy Robert for all of the work he's doing to just make Magic better. Not even just locally. He's trying some really big stuff right now, and I'm in awe of this man.
Sounds good. Well, guys, if you want to talk to us at Extra Turns, as always, we are at Extra Turns Cast on Twitter, extraturnspodcast@gmail.com, or probably the best way to communicate with us, Facebook, facebook.com/extraturns. We're very thankful you listened. Jamie, do you have an email you'd like to share for Legacy Weapon Podcast?
Yeah, you can contact me directly at jamie7keller@gmail.com or legacyweaponpodcast@gmail.com. That one's not really checked as often these days.
Sounds good. Well, we're going to get out of here, listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And as always, try to have fun, play some magic, and don't go into extra turns. We'll be right back.